This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 759. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined by my lovely and lovely and lovely co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You are listening to us on KOOP, HD1, HD3, Hornsby. We stream this show live at KOOP.org. Remember, if it's theater, it's on Offstage and On the Air. Stay right with you. Us.
Step right up, the show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
It is Wednesday, February 14th, 2024. It's Valentine's Day, everybody. On the show today, we have Ground Floor Theater and their show, Always a Boy. And then later on, we'll be talking to Austin Shakespeare and their show, O. Henry Stories. And of course, we were going to have lively discussions about the world of theater in Austin, Houston, San Antonio, El Paso, and other Texas cities. We will be right back. David Bowie, Valentine's Day.
It is Lazarus, man.
It's Lazarus. I'm so impressed that you are so good that you know
you
everything.
You know, like, he's one of my obsessions in life. You know, I was at a private David Bowie concert in my lifetime.
Did you say you had a private David
Bowie? I didn't have it. It was one of the things I worked on when I was doing PR in New York, as we were in charge of doing stuff. Oh. And I was allowed to go. It was 2,500 people. And I was allowed to go and bring some friends. And I brought four of my friends with me. And I got to meet him. And it was fantastic.
I'm not sure if 2,500 people qualifies as a personal concert.
Private concert. On tour, and it was in the Roseland Ballroom in New York. That fits about like 6,000 to 7,000 people. That's a small private concert.
Okay, that's very small. Anyway, it is Valentine's Day.
Were you there? No.
I was there.
No, you weren't.
We didn't know each other.
I wish we did. Wouldn't that have been fun?
Yeah, I had fun back in my New York days.
Me too.
You're my Valentine.
You're always my Valentine. Every day is Valentine's Day with you.
That's true. Let us.
You do know how much I love you.
Right back at you. I'm rubber and you're glue. I'm going to introduce the other folks that are with us in the studio. We have Laura Leo Kelly. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, hey.
And we have Molly Fonseca.
Hey.
And also Nathan Jerkins.
Hey.
All veterans of Offstage and On the Air. How do people feel about Valentine's Day? Bah humbug, me. I like Galentine's Day.
Yeah, I can get behind Galentine's Day. I mean, yes, let's celebrate love and let's celebrate our relationships and our friends and our families and our romantic partners and all of that.
But all that
like,
junk.
I'm going to do that sometime.
I was like, you don't need one designated day to tell people that you love them and you're special in your life.
Yeah.
Also known as Palentine's Day.
Oh, that's Palentine's Day.
There are many iterations of love. Yes. We should celebrate
all
of them.
Or in my Jewish household, we have Schmalentine's Day.
Oh.
I don't know. I just
want to elaborate on that?
Well, you know how it's schmaltzy. Yeah, I know.
Oh.
Stick with me.
Shiro speaks Sheps and Sheps speaks Shiro.
You can take the dad out of the girl, but you can't take the dad jokes out of the girl. She stays there. So yeah, Valentine's Day, that is good. And that was...
Lazarus.
Thank you. Lazarus. I keep wanting to say David Byrne, and it's not David
Byrne.
It's David Bowie. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's David.
It is.
Yeah. Did you know there's a show and a movie called David and Lisa?
Is there?
It's true. It's about two people that meet in an insane asylum.
For real?
Yep. I did it in the 70s. It's a terrible show. Well, speaking of...
Sounds like it could be interesting, so yeah. I'm glad you saved me the time.
It was pretty bad. And the movie's even worse. Speaking of Susie, Eddie Izzard, who goes by Eddie Izzard professionally, but is now Susie Izzard, has a solo show, and she is doing Hamlet.
Hamlet.
And it got reviewed in the paper of record.
You but, said it was a solo show?
It was a,
yeah,
I just.
A one
she's doing a
Hamlet.
Solo Hamlet.
Yep. Solo Hamlet.
All right.
But she just came off as a, of a solo.
She did another. It's not the first solo. Kush Jumbo's done one. Like, the solo Hamlet is, like, the thing.
Yeah.
All right. I think it's fantastic. I love Eddie. There's been a lot of interviews with her this week, too, that have been mm-hmm. really good.
Well, this solo show is directed by Selena Cottle, or Cadell, reviewed at the New York Times by Jason Zinnemann, who I don't know. So, you know, we don't know if we like him or not. Did
it's a
not
fun
like
name
it.
To say.
Did not like the show. So,
did not like the piece and how it was done, or did not like Eddie's performance.
Correct. To all the above.
Oh, that's a combo.
And it is, he says, to laugh or not to laugh. That is the question. He calls it a frenetic, that this frenetic staging is earnest, surprisingly traditional, and deadly serious.
That doesn't sound bad.
No, but I was like, is it...
Okay, where did we get to the bad parts?
Yeah.
It says... well, let me just say to the end. One comes away with the sense that Eddie Izzard didn't perform Hamlet so much as become defeated by it.
Didn't okay. Okay, that, okay, but that's the part different. That sounds
yeah.
bad.
Yeah.
You found
yeah.
it.
Yeah, didn't really like it. So I was hoping he would, but he didn't. So that was it. That's all we're going to say about it. I'm
Guess
leaving
what?
It there.
I still love Eddie Izzard.
Yeah, there's yeah. no reason why you can't or you shan't or you shouldn't.
There you go.
There was an interesting... I'm always fascinated when an off-Broadway show gets reviewed by the New York Times, and specifically Jesse Green of the New York Times, an off-Broadway show. This is The Apiary that was written by Kate Douglas. It's done off-Broadway at the Tony Kaiser Theater. It's getting a nearly perfect first-class staging, according to Jesse Green, directed by Kate Wariski, and has Taylor Schilling in it, Carmen Heerlihy, Stephanie Cruselat, April Mathias, and one other person. I'll find it later. But it's about bees. And the
bees are fascinating.
Bees are fascinating.
Bees are really... I just had a conversation with someone recently randomly about how fascinating bees really
were. And how we are really...
losing the bees.
We're losing the bees, but we need them.
We do.
We are dependent
them.
Upon the need, bees.
I am highly allergic to them bees, but I still find them fascinating.
So is it bees? Like, what's it about? Like, bees?
It's about a group of people trying to... they're talking about how... I believe it's set in the future.
Good.
And it's...
I think they're colonizing bees, right?
They're trying to bring bees back.
Bring the bees back.
Trying to bring the bees back. Okay. And evidently, the whole stage is filled with bugs. They've got bees everywhere. I don't know if they've got little bees hanging from monofilament all through, but they felt like that the bees were swarming all through the theater, which sounds fun.
That's kind of crazy
yeah.
and no. frightening and exciting yeah. at the same yeah. time.
No.
So one would wonder why an off-Broadway show.
What's the connection? Why?
Yeah, it's the Eugene O'Neill Theater Center and Second Stage.
Got it. I was like, who
together.
Was producing? Who was part sure. of it? Who was writing? There was some little...
Here's something good. This is tangential but related. How do we feel about... So once upon a time in the world of theater, shows ran like 3 and 4 hours and were multiple 3 and 4 acts long. Now, 2 hours seems long for a theater, and a lot of shows are going for that hour and a half. What do y'all feel about theater showtime length, running time?
Love a 90-minute show.
Yeah.
Love it. Mm-hmm.
I don't mind the 2.5 hours when it's a good show because I don't even realize it's 2.5.
Right. I was just going to say, I went to go see
shows I can't.
Like, I went to go see The Ferryman on Broadway, and it said, I was brewing a straight play that lasts 3 hours. Loved it. Didn't feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it doesn't feel long, then
right.
beautiful.
It's, yeah, but you can't gauge that before you go.
You
can't.
And you get the I feel bad that I have that mental block in my head if I see a runtime that I'm like, why? Without going right. to see the piece. But I think part of that is that people just scarred us all with some really bad 3 hour stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Harry Potter kind of did that as an experiment because it had part 1 and part 2, and now it's just 1.
Right.
Because people weren't they didn't find the ticket sales for the part two.
No, because that's two full size. I mean, you don't get a discount for buying two.
That was long.
Mm-mm. Yeah, that was long. I remember in the 80s, they had, it was Nicholas Nickleby that was two parts.
Oh, I think it was, yeah.
And I never went to see it, but people, and they were, that was like 2-3 hour.
But see, then there's The Inheritance, and people committed to part one and yep. part two on that without yep. even thinking twice.
Yep.
So, well, something again, it's if it's done right.
Yeah, true. And, but again, you never know.
We got
anyway,
scarred.
I bring this up because this show is 70 minutes long. How? I mean,
it's kind of fantastically.
It is fantastically. But I'll say this. What if you paid $150 to go see a show on Broadway and it was 45 minutes long?
But this is off Broadway and they're not paying.
I know that. I'm just thinking as times get shorter, what if that starts happening? We have a $300 ticket for a 45-minute show.
No. Like, somewhere between an hour and a half and 2.5 hours is my sweet spot.
Yeah.
And I'll take that for both live performances, and it's also happening with movies as well,
so the
right?
Movies
like,
is the
those
same
are
thing.
Stretching longer.
So weird. I don't feel that with movies.
Oh, I do even more so with a movie.
Yeah. It's weird. So one
especially
of the
when you add the 40 minutes of previews in front of it.
Yes, the previews have gotten longer and longer,
oh,
but I like
goodness.
The previews. so one of the things that we haven't talked about on this show for a long time is when they use words in reviews that you need a dictionary for. And this one is really silly if you ask me. Idée fixe. IDEEFIXE. In context, it says, if you do, you may find yourself thinking about more than just bees. Despite wandering fairly close to the electrified fence of an idée fixe, Douglas gradually lets us understand that blah, blah, blah. Anybody know what that means?
No. Could you please use it? No, you just did. I just did. In this sentence, what is it?
Yeah,
no,
my feeling is if you saw it in writing, you would understand. My French pronunciation is edifi, is fixed idea.
Oh, edifi.
Yeah.
Oui.
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
Sure. Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm so glad they didn't just write fixed idea.
Exactly. And that's the thing.
That would have undermined the whole review.
That's the reason why I mentioned
it. At least it's a word and not like a TikTok phrase that makes me feel old.
Okay.
Touche to that. I do.
I'm a TikToker. Okay.
Isn't that all of French?
TikTok. So there was a football game on Sunday.
What?
Mm. Yeah.
Oh.
Did anybody see it?
No. Yeah.
It was around the Usher concert, right?
It was around the
I
Usher concert.
I actually did see it. I don't normally watch the Super Bowl because I've been so angry, but I did watch it this year.
No.
The whole thing?
Were red.
Like all 9 hours or whatever?
Yeah. It wasn't 9 hours, but yeah.
It was 5 hours, 4 hours. Went into overtime. I know that because I watched the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it. The thing about football, and we'll get to the reason why I'm mentioning this right now, but the thing about football is it's so pretty on the high-definition televisions. It's really lovely. And I flipped it on, and I actually turned to the wrong channel on my streaming, and I saw the Nickelodeon version.
I heard about that.
Oh, God, it was
seemed incredible.
It
I
was
want to
so
go back and
crazy.
Watch that.
SpongeBob was the commentator.
I was about to say SpongeBob was.
And all the little lines where they do like the line of scrimmage and everything was all crazy colors.
It was all animated. They
looked like a lot
they
of fun.
Slimed the not the audience.
There was some sliming going on.
There was a lot of sliming.
Anyway, I noticed that I used to watch the football in the 80s. And their costumes have changed a little bit.
They have.
The shoulder pads are much smaller now.
They are. They've been refining all this. Well, I love football. I'm a season ticket holder of the Texans. I love football. And everybody tells me football and theater don't belong. I'm like, it's a show. There's a first act, a second act, choreography, a director,
bad guys.
Yeah. There's lighting. There's dancing. Like, it is a show.
Okay. I don't want to spend a whole bunch of time talking about this, but the reason why I mention it is during the Super Bowl, the Wicked trailer premiered.
Oh,
did anybody see it?
Did you hear that last riff? Oh, Cynthia.
Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande playing the...
Can we talk about Michelle Yeoh? Because that woman is everything. She's playing Madame Morrible.
Oh,
she. And I'm like, she just aged.
So did everybody see the trailer?
I did.
Yes.
No, Molly did not.
I did not.
She She feels very ashamed of herself.
Jeff Goldblum was in the trailer too.
How do we feel about it?
Loved it.
Loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my brother stopped and went, "That looks beautiful. I love what they did." Like, we had a whole conversation, like, talking.
It does look beautiful. See? Two things that anger me slightly.
Oh.
One, they're doing it. You have to. There's two movies to see the
part one
to see
part
the one
two.
Show. I don't like that.
They changed the script a bit. You know,
I'm not going to like that. And then the second thing is, and this is what we've talked about with the latest musicals trailers, is they don't feel like a musical. And at first, I said this feels like a musical, but it doesn't really.
I thought it did more than the last trailers.
They did not show anybody singing in it. They had the music playing in the background. They had music from the show, but you don't see, there's no dancing, there's no, say, it doesn't feel like a musical.
I'm very interested to see what the actual film is like in that regard.
I'm looking forward to it. I did read that Jeffrey Maguire, is that the name of the author?
The book author?
Yeah. He's about to come out in the next...
He's doing
months.
A prequel of the prequel.
Prequel.
Because Wicked is a prequel. It's Gregory Maguire.
Gregory Maguire,
And he's doing a prequel of... Because he did an afterwards, Witch of a Son.
Son of a Witch.
Son of a Witch. There you go. He did that one after. But now he's doing a prequel of the prequel of Wicked and writing another book.
My favorite one of his, because I was a big fan...
He's done him on the Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella's.
Okay, I want to talk now.
I want to talk.
I was a fan of his before this came out. As a matter of fact, my favorite is Confessions of a Wicked Stepsister.
Yes,
that's my favorite one of his.
Yes,
and I did not like his. There's others that I didn't like. So we'll go on.
When the Wicked came out, I went down the rabbit hole of all his books, and it was at that time that Armistead Maupin's Tales of the City had all just been going from the column in the Times that they had compiled them in books. Like PBS hadn't touched it, so I discovered all these, and then I was like, wait, there's movies now, and wait, there's series on PBS now. So it was very exciting.
Okay, we're running out of time. So here's what I'm just going to run through some of these things that we can't do. You can go to offstageonair.com and you can click on the links and see the things that we didn't get time to talk about. One of this was the show Oh Mary, about Mary Todd Lincoln, written by Cole Escolas. Does anybody know them? I had not heard of them. They're a non-binary performer. I just want to read the first paragraph of this article written by Eric Pippenberg.
Another
great
name.
There's a name. Anyway, he said, it's hard to pin down the moment in Oh Mary, a comedy about Mary Todd Lincoln that will send Lincoln scholars and purists into apoplexy. It could be when the First Lady disastrously auditions for a role in Our American Cousin, the play at which John Wilkes Booth would later shoot her husband on April 14th, 1865, or when the deeply closeted Lincoln is orally pleasured at his desk. Maybe the puke drinking scene. There have been walkouts.
Okay, that's hilarious. I was all like,
wild.
Story about Mary Todd Lincoln. I was like, not what I was expecting about Mary Todd Lincoln, and curious.
She's widely known as a very misunderstood woman. We don't really know anything about her. But one of the things I found interesting about this show, written by Cole Escola, was that they wanted to write this from a point of view of how everybody knows Mary Todd Lincoln. So they read no histories until after they had written the piece.
Okay, that's kind of how fun.
So they did no research, and they did it on purpose. And anyway, it's at the Lucille Lortel Theater in New York, which is lovely. I actually worked at the Lucille Lortel when I did Cloud Nine.
I was like, for what?
And it was called, and I like the original name. This is apropos not of this show, but back then it was called Theater Delice, and I just love that name.
Oh, yeah, that is a nice name.
Anyway, that's it. Anyway, here's a picture of Mary Todd, for those of you.
Yes.
I'll show it to the to the listening audience. It looks like a lot of fun. Conrad Riccamora is in it, late of Here Lies Love.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's directed by Sam Pinkleton. They make Mrs. Lincoln. She is a, quote, snide, depressed, tantrum-prone, and romance-starved first lady teeming with a sense of bitterness.
Hmm.
Looks like a lot of fun.
It does look like a lot of fun.
Yeah. They never mention Lincoln in the playbill. He's just referred to as Mary's husband.
Love it.
I love it too. All right, so we're out of time completely. Some of the other things that we were going to talk about. Oh, I really wanted to get to this, but we're not. Great performances in May.
Yeah.
Pearly Victorious,
they
amongst
filmed
other
it
things.
To put it on. I'm very excited about that myself.
Yeah. Boy George is in.
He went into Moulin Rouge.
He went into Moulin Rouge. They have a little interview with him.
Straight from doing his arena Peter Pan in England.
Yep. My son's a queer, postponed a whole season. And they were just getting ready to go.
Their
tickets were on sale.
Yes. And they didn't tell Rob Matt.
They didn't tell anybody. There was social a whole article about Rob people Matt. Learning about their shows being right. canceled
from social media.
There was a big article on that earlier today.
Yep.
They were another group that fell. Victim to that, Here Lies Love. That was another one.
Is the last thing that we'll talk about just for news that's very exciting is the movie Color Purple will be available on streaming on Max in 2 days.
I know, because I was all excited. I was like, ooh, I can watch that and catch up on The Feud this weekend.
Yeah, I'm gonna
because have you watched The Feud? You need to check out The Feud.
Yeah, okay.
Capote versus the Swans.
Oh, right. No, right now I'm in the process of putting together a play, I have no time to watch TV.
I'm just telling you to put that on your little list there.
Anyway, so let's listen to The Color Purple. Let's listen to Fantasia singing I'm Here.
She's good.
I know. Amazing. Here it is. We'll be back.
I've got my cheering.
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole.
Hello.
We just had such a wonderful conversation with our guests, and now we're going to talk to them about why they're really here.
They're doing a show.
They're doing a show. Darn it. It's the scenery. It's the costumes. It's the makeup. Yeah. So this is Ground Floor Theater's production of Always a Boy. And from the show, we have the director of the show, Lisa Sheps. Welcome, Lisa.
Ooh. Welcome, Lisa.
Hi, thanks for coming on the show. Oh, I'm glad to be here.
I wish we had the video up today so they could see you doing your Jekyll and Hyde solo number.
We also have three of the performers, Laura Leo Kelly. Hi, Laura Leo.
Hello.
Molly Fonseca.
Hello.
And Nathan Jerkins.
Hi.
Well, great. I'm so happy to have y'all on. And in fair and transparency, this is a Ground Floor Theater show of which I am the co-artistic director. I'm also the director of the piece. So I'm not only interviewing, I'm a guest.
You're also a client.
I'm a client. It's true. Those commercials don't happen anymore, do they?
No. I
just went there.
I was talking about that the other day that I haven't Hair seen those on forever. Just that's so random.
Cy Sperling.
Just go bald gracefully.
Yes.
Like I'm losing it. It's
GBG.
Fine.
So do one of the three of you want to just give a rundown of what
give
this show is?
Nickel Dime Tour. What's happening?
You don't have to. I can do it, but it'd be better if it was one of you.
Yeah.
What's the show, Laura Leo?
Always a Boy is about a boy.
Who's always
okay,
a boy.
Thanks for being on the show.
I'm so glad you came.
This is a story of a trans kid growing up and finding himself and coming out to his family and exploring what those family dynamics look like.
True.
Nailed it.
Yeah. And what role do you play in this show?
I play the college version of our main character, Joshua. So I'm in college.
Right.
good. Well, and I love that about the show, that you see Joshua at three different stages in his life, right? When he's 12 and when he's in college, and then when he's grown up and sort of gone through the turbulent times that the show's about.
Right. Yeah. So this involves the pardon me?
It's like a retrospective-y.
Yeah. It involves the family dynamics and how they play out and how the family changes and molds along with the things that go on. And Molly, who do you play?
I play Rachel, the mother. And like a lot of us, we get to do some flashbacks in different parts of this entire journey, which you get to kind of, again, see that exploration and growth that comes with those flashbacks.
And Nathan, your role?
I play Richard, Joshua's father, which I really like. The whole show has kind of Ted Lasso vibes in which everyone's trying to do right by each other. And life is still complicated and it's still hard and there is still plenty of drama.
without anyone trying to invent it for each other, right? So everyone's trying to do right by each other. And like, I want to get behind more of those stories in the world. Please give me more stories about parents trying really hard for their trans kids. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Please. Yeah.
It's a wonderful story. I like to think that we use a lot of magical realism. There's a not fantasy, but there's magic that happens in the show, and it's really fun. It's set as in a series of flashbacks. We learn about the process of not only Joshua discovering his own path to transition, but dealing with the families. And as a trans person myself, I do have to say that one of the things that in the coming out experience is this is something that we deal with forever, and we have been dealing. And then when we show ourselves, our true selves, to our loved ones, they have to deal with something that to them is brand new. And it's a very interesting dynamic that happens in almost all coming out stories in the trans experience.
And I think that's something I really love about it, and that I've been discovering more and more throughout this whole process, is seeing those points when it was so obvious that Joshua was going through this that my character totally missed or overlooked or didn't quite understand what was being said to them. So finding those moments has really been fun and effective, I feel like.
Yeah, and the beauty of having three different stages of Joshua, seeing that the college version, which is sometimes where we all focus on the crux of when people find themselves, that's just the college version. And you get to see the roots of where that came from in the childhood version of that and what's on the other end.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lovely piece. We had our first dress rehearsal last night, and it was really nice to see it come together. This was written by Joe Ivester and Jeremy Ivester. And one of the things that is telling a true life story, or it's a fictionalized story of their own story itself, of Jeremy's coming out. And we're fortunate enough that Jeremy is actually playing Joshua, the older version. So we actually have the person that the play is based on playing the role, which I think is fun.
And the playwright. Plus, who's also a playwright. And then in the show.
Yep.
It's like a trifecta.
It's amazing. It's really good. Well, we're going to do a little scene, right?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And this, you'll see a little bit of what we're talking about. This is relatively early on in the show. And this is...
they're all warming up like they're on the field at football.
I don't want to pull a hamstring, right? This is a lot.
This shows Joshua when he just comes back from college for... not really the first time, but he's coming back for the holidays during the holidays. And starts the process of telling his parents a little bit of his journey. I will say there's some interjections by our younger Joshua that I will be doing for the sake of this reading. Are y'all ready to start?
Let's do it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is Laura Leo Kelly, Molly Fonseca, and Nathan Jerkins doing a scene from Ground Floor Theater's production of Always a Boy.
I wish college weren't so far away. I miss you.
I miss you too, Mom.
And are you okay?
Never better.
Did you get all of the classes you want for next term?
I did.
And did you do well in your finals?
I think so. Yes, I did. I was ready. What's with all the questions?
Do you have a boyfriend?
Mom.
Or a girlfriend?
What? No. Oh, like, why would you ask me that?
It's not an unreasonable question. You've never had a crush on a boy. You don't date. You don't even seem interested.
First of all, you need to stop. Second, people don't date anymore. They just hang out.
Then do you hang out with anyone? A girl, maybe?
Mom, I'm not gay.
Because, you know, sweetie, if you are a lesbian, your father and I would be totally okay with it.
Dreidel, 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 I made you out of clay. Hey, Ash, come and give me a hand.
Yes, please, anything to get me out of this conversation.
What conversation?
Ash was just telling us that she's not gay.
Mom!
Oh.
Your father and I have been talking about this.
You've been talking about this? About my sex life?
We're just worried about you, kiddo.
Again, about my sex life?
We're just saying, if you're uninterested in sex at your age, we think it might be time to talk to a professional, a doctor, maybe, an endocrinologist.
Still, totally inappropriate discussion, but a good segue, I guess. I haven't been seeing an endocrinologist, but I have been talking to a therapist. He's been really helpful.
That's good, I guess. How long have you been seeing him?
Since the start of term, Dad. And to answer the question I know you want to ask, yes, we've been talking about a lot of this stuff.
And what does he say about you not dating?
Mostly he asks me what I think about it, but also he says that it's okay to explore, that I don't have to decide everything right now. He also encouraged me to tell you about something else, so here goes.
What is it, sweetie?
It's about all this. You probably noticed how I dress, that I'm in men's clothes, even my shoes.
Uh-huh.
Hey, just spit it out. No judgment, okay?
I know, and this is a good thing, I'm going to tell you. I promise. It's just hard to talk about, and I haven't really discussed it with anyone except Dr. Winston. I'm wearing a binder.
Ashley, I don't know what that is. Rachel, do you know what that is?
I'm getting there, Dad. It makes my chest flat, the way I like it. I don't know if I can explain how much more comfortable I am when I look like this. It's like the way I'm supposed to be, you know?
Oh, I think I understand. I developed early, and I remember how much I disliked it at first, and my body was way ahead of the rest of me.
I don't think you do understand, Mom. This isn't the same at all. It's so much bigger. It's like there's been this tornado whirling around inside me. I keep trying to ignore it, but it cuts away at me and just keeps blowing me in all directions and gets faster and faster and more awful. But when I'm wearing my binder, I feel calm. It's like I'm on top of every mountain, and it's peaceful. It's clarity. I finally truly look the way I feel inside. Before, I used to stay awake all night wishing something magic would happen, that I'd wake up as...
Say it. Say you wanted to wake up as a boy, because you are a boy.
Well, that I'd wake up as more like myself.
Oh, man.
I'm not sure what that even means.
Excellent. And scene. Oh, very good.
That was awesome sauce.
That was good. This is the first time Nicole has heard this scene.
Yes.
What questions have you?
I really, really enjoyed that. And so I want to ask, is the young Joshua then kind of narrating and telling the whole story through where it goes backwards? That's kind of what it seemed like, which I think is really good because you get a perspective from the inside. Like when you want to ask a character, when you're watching a play and you want to ask that character, like, why? Yeah. Why? Or I wish I knew here. And when you can go back into these retrospective in different areas, I feel like you get some of that.
Actually, close. Young Joshua doesn't really narrate, but it's really what I like to call the Joshua character is really is in the present time. And I've kind of called him the omnipotent narrator because he's the one that knows the whole story from front to back. So it sort of is narrated if there is a narrator. By Joshua.
And all three versions of us are narrating throughout. Correct. And experiencing it. And it kind of touches on that idea of healing your inner child, which I think a lot of us as trans folks don't always... Sometimes it feels like we didn't experience our childhood as we wanted to.
I was about to say, really I get from it a healing your inner child. I was just about to say that from that.
Yeah, so having like your child self watch you go through these things and find joy and find all those wins is really... beneficial and healing.
Yeah. Well, that's great. We are out of time.
May I ask a question? How long is the runtime on this show?
It is 1 hour and 28 minutes long.
Which is not too long.
Yeah, no. It's under an hour and a half.
Never too short.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with no intermission. The show opens this coming Thursday, and it plays through the 2nd of March. Folks, if they want more information, may go to groundfloortheater.org. So that's good. I'm going to wish y'all the best.
Yeah.
My best wishes. I never say good luck anymore because we don't need it. I'm going to say break a leg and have fun and best wishes for the entire run.
Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you for doing a scene today, too.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
You're welcome. Come back. That was Laura Lee O'Kelly, Molly Fonseca, Nathan Jerkins, and Leisha Sheps. Ooh. All of Ground Floor Theater's production of Always a Boy, opening February 15th.
It's like December.
Through March 2nd. For more information, groundfloortheater.org. And this is from Footloose. Let's hear it for the boy. We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole. What a great conversation. And that show, Always a Boy, seems really fun. I can't wait to see it. Okay.
You can see it all the time. But no, I'm very excited about that. Yeah, we should note that's a world premiere.
It is a world premiere.
We did say it was a world premiere.
We did not say that. It is a world premiere.
Yeah.
Written by Joe Ivester and Jeremy Ivester, as we said. So let's, before we start talking about our local, let's just introduce the folks that have just joined us in the studio. Veterans of this program,
yes.
All. Our lovely co-host, Anne Ciccolella.
Merci, merci.
We were speaking French earlier today. Ev Lunning. Hi, Ev.
Good afternoon.
And Tim Blackwood. Hi, Tim.
Hello.
Great. Well, we're just going to take a moment to talk about what's going on locally, and then we will zip through this. This is one of the things that I found that looks really, really fun, and I need to turn my computer back on to see what it is. But it's called Fresh Squeezed Ounce of Opera.
First of all, it's a great name and title.
Isn't it?
Yep. I saw that, and I was like, ooh, hats off to you marketing people. That was cleverly witty and clever, and I like it.
I do, too. And as a matter of fact, it is the name of the company is Ounce of Opera,
right.
I believe.
Right?
Yeah.
That's why it's even more clever and witty when you put them together.
Yep.
Triple O.
Triple O, yes.
And it's playing at MOHA, the Museum of Human Achievement.
Yes.
February 23rd through March 3rd. And it is four new micro operas.
I love it.
MOs, as we call them. Yep. And they have not performed since, and I believe this is the sixth annual.
I was like, it hasn't happened in a while, right?
Hasn't happened since
before the COVID
pandemic,
right?
Yeah,
that's what I thought.
Very good. So, and we don't give MOHA a lot of love on this program, so it's good to give them some love.
I love it.
Yeah.
I like that it's a micro opera. Then, you know, if you're not sure that opera's your jam, you can really go in there and find that there really is an opera for everyone. I think everyone just thinks opera is always so stuffy.
And we have Lola, local opera, local artists here in town. And of course, we have Austin Opera. And how do we feel about opera? Are we fans? Or are we?
I love it.
Ev was in the opera.
I used to sing in the chorus.
Oh, okay. Sing
and of course, I love the opera.
Sing
as well.
Tulo Sai for me.
What else would I say?
No. Yeah. I've told this on the program. My initiation into opera was André Chenet, which is really advanced opera and should not be anybody's first opera. Mm-mm. But I did enjoy watching the supernumeraries. This was at the Met in New York, and there were like the supers were like playing. I remember they had little dolls with little miniature guillotines. It was fun. Anyway, I also guest on the show 2 weeks ago was a Maygene. Which is over at the Vortex.
The world-famous Bob.
World-famous Bob. And I went to see it. I saw the dress rehearsal. It was really lovely. And it had, it's basically queer artists of a certain age. I am young in comparison to many of those artists.
Yes, wow. Richard did some of his piece. Richard was 90.
90. Richard is 90.
Yeah.
That's inspiring.
Yeah, he read some of his piece about tripping on the streets of Austin back in the when he was in his 40s. I was dying. I was like, this is fantastic. And then we had another gentleman, I think Jason, and I think he was in his late 60s, early 70s, that did a piece that was on the show like 2 weeks ago. Yep. I was loving everything about it.
Yeah, they're fun. It is over, unfortunately. It's already done, but I just want to say that I got to see it. And I work with all those people as part of my intergenerational queer writing group, so it's good. Here's what else is going on in town. Sanctuary City is going to be done at UT the 16th through the 18th. I want to see that because, you know, I have to see every show that I've produced.
You have to see everything that you do. I know you like it.
I need to see her. I told what last week we had Austin
Spitfire Girl.
Yeah, and I, you know, you go see things that, and I think maybe, I don't know if y'all can relate to me on this, but I go see things that I've directed and I go to hate watch it. I want to go there and say that mine was so much better, but I really enjoyed Austin Playhouse's
Lisa
version
of it. Lisa actually cried, and Lisa's not the crier or emotional in the shows, and she was like, okay, I
So anyway, so I'm going to go to Sanctuary City, but I know ours was better. That's not true. Frontera Fest is still going through the 17th. I think we're in our last week. I think we're in Best of Fest week.
We are.
Yeah. Million Dollar Quartet over at TexArts is playing through the 18th. HCA, Hans Christian Andersen's Little Mermaid.
Yes.
I had to ask you what that says for. HCA. As a Zach Theater through the 3rd of March. Peter and the Starcatcher. It's so funny. I went from one line to one line. It looked like it was the Starcatcher. It's Peter and the Starcatcher at St. Ed's.
Because you skipped a line.
I know. I'm going back.
That's why.
Mary Moody Northern Amphitheater through the 18th of this month. We just talked about it. Spitfire Grill at Austin Playhouse through the 18th. The Great Comet of 2074.
Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812.
Otherwise known as the Great Comet.
Great show.
Yeah. Did you enjoy it?
I saw it, yes.
Good. Sorry. Well, I want to see it. Who else has seen it? Anybody?
I saw it in New York.
I saw it in New York, too. Wasn't it amazing? Uh-huh. It made me change my mind about the Grobes.
Mm-hmm. It did. She didn't want to go see it at all, and I was like, you have to go.
It was amazing.
And not for the show, but also for the Grobes. And she was like, neither appealed to me, and then came back and was like, I love the Grobes.
So it's playing through the 3rd. Mm-hmm. We talked about this last week. Fancy Meeting Me Here by Leanne Webster at the Rosette Theater through the 22nd.
That's a great theater name, by the way.
It is. Twilight of the Golds. They were on the show last week. Through the 25th. Always a Boy. They were on the show this week.
Today.
Opens Thursday, plays through the 2nd. Glary Glenn Ross, Communications by Captivation, from the 22nd through the 25th.
You're torn by it?
Yeah, torn by it. Anyway, Red is playing at ACC from the 23rd through the 3rd. And finally, at the Scottish Rite, I like this.
This is so great.
Barney Carey Gets His Wings, playing through March 10th.
I'm so glad you wrote that.
There's lots of stuff going on right now, and we're going to jump right into Today in Theater History.
Stuff happened.
Today in Theater History. It's amazing how many people have a birthday on February 14th.
Bon anniversaire.
Because, as you know, by the way, we didn't tell y'all, because you weren't here at the beginning of the show, Happy Valentine's Day.
Oh, thank
Happy
you.
Happy Valentine's Day to
or
you.
Galentine's Day. Or Palentine's Day.
Although we don't think you should wait until today to tell the people that you love them.
That's
just
true.
Just saying.
Birthdays on this day of the vow. Gregory Hines. I know.
Renee. And you know, his brother Maurice passed away not too long
that's
ago.
True.
And we did not talk about that. And I meant to say shame on us.
Oh, shame on us. Renee Fleming's birthday is today.
She's coming to town.
And Solo, part of us.
Soon.
Amazing.
Long sent.
Florence Henderson.
Wow.
And
Jack
Benny.
Jack Benny.
Jack Benny was born on February 14th. And one, John Barrymore.
He might go somewhere, Mr. Barrymore.
Here's the interesting thing.
What?
So Jack Benny, I mean, we're all of a certain age. I remember Jack Benny, and so I sort of think of a contemporary, but I wouldn't think that John Barrymore was in the same age, but they are the same age.
Wow.
Well, they're 2 years apart.
Oh, really? Mm.
Yeah, Jack Benny drank less.
You want to know what it is?
Jack Benny was born in 1894, and John Barrymore was born in, 1882.
Well,
I read 92, but it's still very close. Yeah.
But part of it is, I think, also the whole Barrymore family and legacy is so looked upon in this weird, glorious, you know, crazy, dramatic way that I think it romanticizes it in a period that's much longer and further away than Jack Benny. I dated a guy whose dad was on the Jack Benny show all the time.
Excellent.
One of the comedians there.
Amazing.
Jack Benny was one of those people who did vaudeville, radio, TV, and
everything.
Film.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. Thank you.
Okay. Openings at the Antitheater, which is the theater I performed in, because it's all about me. In 1979 was Whoopi.
Interesting.
And West Side Story opened. Oh, this revival, opened in 1980. They never say whether it's a revival. They just say West Side Story.
Well, and then, it's 1980. I mean, we can tell.
Well, but there are shows that I'm stupid enough to go, oh, it just opened then. But no, it was 20 years before that. Love, Valor, Compassion at the Walter Kerr Theater in 1995. And the original Grease opened in 1972.
Vintage year.
I saw Grease in, I want to say it was in 77 when I first moved to New York. And then I've never seen it again, ever.
You know, Linda Nano was in Broadway production.
You never saw the movie?
I've seen bits and pieces. I've never watched the movie all the way
through. You need to watch Soccer Training.
Yeah. So anyway, and I could not find... on iTunes, which is where I get my music, they don't have the original soundtrack or the original cast album of the originals. But we have the one that Billy Porter was in, the revival, which is what we're going to hear him sing, Beauty School Dropout. We'll be right back.
Beauty School Dropout.
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole. And now we're going to jump in and talk to our friends at Austin Shakespeare and reintroduce everybody. So we just do it in context. And then we have the artistic director of Austin Shakespeare, Ann Ciccolella. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, howdy.
Well, howdy. That's me. Hi, howdy.
Doing an accent for O. Henry because he lived in Austin, where they say.
He did, which howdy, I did howdy. Not realize until I read about this. I kept seeing about the O. Henry pun off, and I just thought it was just something we did. Didn't realize he lived here.
You never passed his house downtown?
I've never gone to his. He's never invited.
Well, you got to go to the Hilton because it's across the street.
Next right to the fire station.
Is that his house?
Yeah. Sprouted a huge hotel right across the street.
Okay, you know, I know that house, but I didn't know it was his. Ev Lunning, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
And Bob Brinkley, hello.
Bob
Brinkley. Oh, God, I did that. Tim Blackwood. I've got it as a person here.
It's kind of adorable.
And I just read and not look.
I was just about to go, what like funny inside joke did I miss? How come he's Bob Brinkley?
No, that's my character, actually.
I've got all the, they sent me all the character names and I wasn't
sure. That's what it was. One of his characters.
Yes.
Right, and you've got a million of them.
Yes.
A million. So, Ann, did you direct this piece?
I did, and I adapted it.
Tell us about it.
Well, like you, Lisa, I associate O. Henry with New York City. Because I'm originally from Hoboken, New Jersey. But I eventually learned that he spent 13 years of his life here. And that sort of intrigued me into this idea of taking a variety of his short stories, some of which are about Austin, some of which are about New York City, and adapting them into this series of 9 short stories, 12 actors, 44 roles.
Oh, my gosh.
It's kind of like our town, though.
And
here they come, here they go.
Here they go.
is it done in narrative style, or are we just hearing
individual
stories?
I tried to just write the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
But O. Henry's voice really is a narrative voice. So there is a little bit of narration where you really get to hear him. But the boys are going to recite some lines for you.
Oh, lovely.
So you'll get the O. Henry, what I call the curlicues. It's like, man, could he use language? It ain't simple.
No.
Okay. Ev, tell us about you and some of your characters, or all of your characters, or some of them. What are you doing?
Four characters. Uh-huh. One is a cowboy cook named Judd Odom. The other one is a Bowery bum named Soapy. And then a down-and-out German artist whose name is Berman, and an Irish bartender whose name is Mike.
Mike. There, finally, a normal name. Soapy was my sorority name in college. Tim, you play a lot of roles as well. What are you doing?
Yeah, don't ask me to recite them all.
Okay, though, give us a couple.
I'll leave one out.
Give us your favorites.
Well, basically, no, I play a couple different characters. One is an old cook. That's the father of someone in the show. I play a cop and that interacts with Soapy. I play a doctor. I play a rich person.
Oh.
And so, and that's a couple other characters.
That's the role I want to play.
A little less descript than that.
Awesome. And so is this done, is it done on a set? Do you have tell us about the time and place.
I say our town, Lisa.
Okay, so it's a ladder.
Because it's a lot of, exactly. It's a lot of imaginary stuff.
Okay.
Loa Bartholomew did some projections for us. And man, the sound effects and the music and the soundtrack is great.
Did Loa also do the audio?
Kelly Bland did
Kelly,
that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, amazing.
But that's great. And we also have some live music and some live singing.
I was just going to say, there's the music, it is live.
Well, some of it. Yeah. Some of it.
So, oh,
but some
so
of it is period.
It's
just a lot of fun. So we have waltzing and polka and tap dance.
Oh, okay.
You know, I love me the tap.
Auto harp that are
okay. Amazing. Right. What I know, of course, but for those people that don't know, what era did he live? When was he here?
I really think of it as 1900.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Meaning a little before, a little after. Ev is going to correct me.
Correct.
But 1880s and 1890s. He was...
Around the time Jack Benny was born.
He was born in 1862 and died in 1910.
Oh, Tim really? Has been studying.
Yeah. To be
and
you know,
he got here, didn't he get here in like 85, 86, somewhere around there to Austin?
He was in his 20s when he gets here.
Yeah,
1882.
He came from North Carolina for his health and worked on a ranch south of San Antonio. And he wrote stories about his life as a cowboy.
That's amazing. You know, we talked here on the program last week about a book that I got about the history of theater in Austin around that time period. And I was fascinated to learn how much theater was here in the late 1800s.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if
The Scottish Rite Theater was built in 1869, mm-hmm. right?
Well, but there's a whole bunch. There's also the Hyde Park Theater, but I don't believe it's Hyde Park Theater.
It's not the same Hyde Park.
But there was an opera house. There were several theater houses here in the late 1800s. And there was a theater dynasty, and there were critics, and a whole theater community back then.
It was like really big and bustling.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if he played any of those houses. I'm sure he did. Yeah.
Probably.
Well, he really was a community person. So he was doing Gilbert and Sullivan. He had a barbershop quartet. So I don't think he was performing. I think there was a lot of touring when you're talking about.
Yeah, there was actually, we did talk about some.
Sarah Bernhardt and so on toured Austin. But we're just delighted that he was here and that we have locations for him. Because he really is a genius short story writer. I mean, the more I learned, the more I was like
amazed. But we should say, because I think we were talking about this off air, his home is still here. Like, they've moved. Didn't it move like 3 or 4 blocks?
The little block is called Brush Square. And the group that oversees them is called the Brush Square Museums, because they've also moved Susanna Dickinson's house onto the same block. Right.
Got it. It's over off of 4th Street.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So y'all are prepared to do some pieces or...
Go, boys.
What are we going to do? Set it up. Set it up and do it.
Set it
so
up and
the second
us.
Play is called Pimienta Pancakes, and it's one of his cowboy stories. And there's a cowboy who's injured on the job, and he's stuck in camp, and he ends up talking to the camp cook. And Pimienta Pancakes is a story that the camp cook tells. So Judd Odom starts to, he says, what about these pancakes? And he says, you rest you here in this under the shade of this hackberry tree, and I'll tell you. I was punching for old Bill Odom along the banks of the San Miguel River. And one day, I gets all ensnared in aspirations for to eat some canned grub what ain't never mooed or bawed or grunted. So I gets on my bronc, and I pushes the wind over to Uncle Emsley Telfair's store at the Pimienta Crossing on the Nueces. About 3 in the afternoon, I toss my bridle rein over a mesquite limb and walk the final 20 yards to Uncle Emsley's store. I got on the counter, and I told Uncle Emsley all the signs pointed to a devastation of the fruit crop of the world. In a minute, I had a bag of crackers, a mighty long-handled spoon, and an open can each of apricots, pineapples, and cherries, with Uncle Emsley alongside of me busy chopping away with a hatchet at the yellow cling peaches. I felt like Adam before the apple.
Oh, my gosh. It's fun. And now I'm hungry. I'm hungry. And Tim, you're going to do something as well, right?
Yeah, I was going to do a scene from Him Who Waits.
Let's do it.
Which is a story of a hermit that is has gone into hiding due to being jilted by a woman. And I'm someone that comes in and
may
is talking
I say,
to him.
It's in the Catskill Mountains.
Ah, okay. Is he Jewish?
No.
Okay.
He's not
dancing.
Doing the circuit.
Go ahead, Tim.
You're Hamp Ellison, despite the whiskers and the bathrobe. I read about you in the bill of fare at the inn. They run your biography in between the cheese and the not responsible for coats and umbrellas. I don't understand it, old pal. I could see giving up a woman for 10 years, but not 10 years for a woman. Of course, I know why you did it. Everybody does. Edith Carr. You know, she jilted 5 other guys besides you, but you are the only one that took to a hole in the ground.
Oh,
that's it.
Okay, amazing. So we're just about out of time. When does this show happen?
So we have our preview on Friday, which is already sold out. But
lovely.
We open on Saturday night with a bar open after the show for libations. And Sunday afternoon 3, and then the next week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, closing on the 25th.
Okay.
So just 2 weekends.
And where can folks go to get more information?
AustinShakespeare.org, please.
And you're at the Rollins, correct?
We are. We're at the Long Center.
Wonderful.
Fantastic.
Well, thank you all
for
having
us.
Show.
So great to have your show.
That was Anne Ciclella, Ev Loning, and Tim Blackwood of Austin Shakespeare's O. Henry Stories. Opens this Friday and plays through the 25th. More information at AustinShakespeare.org. And Nicole, we just have time to say goodbye. So that's what we're gonna. That's
what
we're gonna
goodbye.
Do.
See you next week.
Au revoir. Goodbye. You know, we've got the Austin Cooperative Common Radio Hour next, and our very, 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 very dear friend Robert Sims
him,
with
Robert
Lights
Sims.
Camera Austin is coming up next. So we'll go out of the show and of our section with O. Henry Stories with From the Show Crossing Swords. Crossing Swords from the original Canadian cast with a song called The Stories We'll Write. We'll see you next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Imagine the stories you'll write. Just think of the songs that you'll sing. There are so many dreams to be dreamed, and we've only one lifetime before us to do everything. Our